We're at the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum. I'm covered in sawdust already. I love it. It smells so good. Welcome aboard the Funny Boat Podcast. I am your host, Captain Boomies. With me is not the broker with the beard, which is why I've already cursed this episode and I have screwed up the recording. But that's okay because I have a replacement and it is the Dadmiral. That's right. He's here with me. How are you doing, Pops?
Good. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, hold the mic like I taught you, though.
Good. I'm glad to be here. There you go.
You're normally so good at this. What's going on? You're distracted by all the cool stuff around
you.
Yeah,
it is kind of cool. I do like woodworking. I especially like all the tools.
There's a lot of tools in here.
I have tools at home, but nothing compared to here.
Except
I don't see a wood lathe. What's going on with that?
We have two.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So the reason we're here today is because our guest is from the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum at the shipwright side. That's right. They build lots of wooden boats. They have to maintain all of their historic vessels. So somebody's got to know how to use all of these very cool tools that look like they belong in the most perfect horror movie ever. Oh my God, what is that? Never mind. But Sam, thank you so much for joining us. Sam, I've already forgotten your title. Could you please repeat it for me?
Absolutely. My title is Vessel Conservation Manager.
Vessel Conservation Manager. What does that mean?
It means that I am responsible for managing a phenomenal team of shipwrights and shipwright apprentices in the maintenance and restoration of our historic vessels, mostly in the water, as well as small craft that are stored out of the water. I also overlap with our billable staff. A little bit more than half of our shipyard is comprised of shipwrights working on contract projects and grant-funded projects, which could be client vessels or in-house grant-funded projects.
This was the thing that blew my mind, was the fact that you can bring your wooden vessel here and pay your team to get it fixed up, which is just so cool because, oh my God, it's so much work to maintain these wooden vessels, and it blows my mind that people try to do it by themselves.
What about non-wooden vessels? Do you do any of those?
That's a great question, actually. The only exception that we have is because we do quite a bit of rigging work, and there are some vessels with pretty traditional rigs that are not wooden vessels. That is one exception. So we have, there are some examples of steel-hulled vessels, even fiberglass vessels, that have traditional rigs and rigging, wooden spars, sometimes wooden decks. So we would make an exception. But we don't do hull work on steel vessels, aluminum, fiberglass. And actually, we don't really do a lot of wooden composite work either. So we try and stay away from the glue as much as possible and the fiberglass as much as possible.
That's why it smells good in here.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm going to ask a dumb question. What exactly is a shipwright? I've used that word plenty, and I pretty much only ever mean somebody who's working on a historic vessel.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. Like, I my husband's a ship's engineer, and he fixes boats, but I call him a technician most of the time.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Really, it's interchangeable here with boatwright and boat builder. Historically, they might have meant slightly different things, boatwright, shipwright. But there are, a lot of the people that work here do have experience on larger craft, heavier timber, hull construction and restoration work. Most people that have gone to some kind of vocational school probably went to what you would call a boat building school, and they're working on smaller vessels. There are some schools actually that have large craft and small craft programs. But even this yard, we do call it CBMM Shipyard, and there are a lot of staff that think, we should call it the boat yard, the CBMM boat yard. But most of the vessels we work on are under 60 feet.
Nah, call it shipyard. Sounds cooler that way. It makes me feel more historic walking in here and seeing the creepy chain lift. Oh my God, I'm so distracted in here. It's really a problem. There's also the biggest block and tackle I've ever seen.
It's a big one.
Made out of wood. That is bonkers. I don't. Did somebody have to make that or did you inherit that? Is that part of the museum?
We've inherited those.
Okay.
Yep.
So I think the other thing that blows my mind is people walk through your shop here as part of the museum.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an open air exhibit. It's not for show though. We're not acting. We're not reenacting, but it is a kind of living exhibit. And we do invite guests to walk through. We try and keep it clear and clean. There are obviously some tripping hazards around. If we're doing anything that we feel is dangerous for folks who wouldn't have eye or ear protection, we'll rope it off. But otherwise, it's pretty much an open area, and we always welcome. We actually require our shipwrights here on staff to engage with guests, to stop what they're doing if they can, and to take the time to answer questions. And so sometimes guests think they're being, they're being distracting, but we really welcome that.
Well, there's just so much going on here and it's changing constantly. I don't really know how anybody keeps tabs on it, but which is actually one of the reasons we came to talk to you, because you've got something new coming up.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited about it.
Yeah.
You're going to be racing skipjacks.
Yeah. So in previous years, we have occasionally attended with our skipjack Rosie Parks. We've occasionally attended one, sometimes two skipjack races.
All right, let's pause for a second. I need you to explain what a skipjack is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question. And actually, I can give a really simple definition, and then there's a little bit more of a complicated definition. Today, a skipjack is a sailing dredge boat.
A sailing dredge boat.
It's got two sails.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, these are hard chine cross-planked vessels. So they're work boats. They're local to the Chesapeake Bay. They developed in the mid and southern eastern shore areas in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. And there is still a somewhat significant sized fleet of these dredge boats operating. Many of them are owned and maintained by nonprofit organizations like ours. And then there are actually a nice little handful of privately owned vessels that still dredge commercially out of primarily Deal Island.
No.
Wow.
Way.
Yep.
That's bonkers. Okay.
Do these boats have keels?
They do. Okay. Yeah. They have keels. They don't have external ballast. They have a centerboard.
Okay.
I mentioned earlier that it's a little bit of a complicated question, because historically, today, we really just have this type of boat called a skipjack.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard chine vessel. That means that there's a flat or kind of shallow V bottom, and then it goes to a hard edge and then turns up. So the top sides have a kind of a hard, abrupt angle as they transition to the bottom planking. But historically, there were other kinds of dredge boats around. A lot of people might be familiar with the term bug eye. There were bug eyes. There were also other types of oyster sloops. There were schooners. There were things called three-sail bateaux, which is like a skipjack with two masts. But historically, the term skipjack actually referred to the rig. And a bateau referred to the hull, being this kind of V or shallow or flat transitioning to V-bottomed, simply constructed hull. The early boats were, some of them were fore and aft planked, and some were cross planked. So there's a lot of variation. And then now, as we're getting into early 21st century, the survivors are mostly all the same. Although even then, there's one skipjack that's fore and aft planked, hard chine, and then there's actually still an oyster sloop that has this skipjack rig.
So I need to back up for a second, because there's a lot of power boaters who listen to this podcast, and you've already said so many words that I'm sure that they're going, scritch, scritch. So let me put it to you this way. We're talking about a boat, a sailboat, that has a wide and flat enough bottom to be able to get into what are relatively shallow parts of the Chesapeake Bay. So all of the creepy little creeks and rivers that we've got here, all the way up them. and then be able to fill them with a bunch of gunk and still sail them away.
Yeah.
So that's what the shape of this boat accomplishes. And I can't imagine they're great racing boats.
Yeah. I would say true. The Skipjack, there was some debate the turn of the century about these three sail bateaux versus the one sail, mm-hmm. or sorry, the two sail. The Skipjack, it has this big main and it's kind of a huge sail. If you're from,
it's kind of overpowered.
It's a little overpowered, especially in a breeze. They have to sail the reef, but in very light winds, they're actually quite handy. The earlier version, the earlier types were a little bit more stable and a little safer in a sea state and in higher winds with a little bit more of that scalable rig, usually also a shorter rig being the three sail bateau. But the two sail became more popular, definitely better in the lighter winds and more economical to maintain.
Well, that's cool. Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. Now, you are going to race these. So who are we challenging?
Yeah, that's a good question. So most of these Skipjack races historically, let's say actually just within the last 10 years, have between maybe 6 and 12 Skipjacks. I know that, so we're attending all of the races. There are three races. The first is September 1st, which is Ooh. Labor Day, which is a Monday. 2 weeks late, and that is the Deal Island Skipjack race.
Deal Island Skip. So you're going up against the working folk.
The
boats
yeah.
that are actually doing the job.
We are. So at that race, I don't know how many boats will be there, but I would think around maybe 10 to 15, because I do know that the next race, which is Annapolis.
Now, did you throw down this challenge or did they?
So this has been a race that's been held for a very long time. I believe the Deal Island race, the first one was in 1960.
Ooh, that's, see, now we're getting into one
and
of those like historic.
Actually, our boat, Rosie Parks, uh-huh. our Skipjack, won that very first race
Whoa.
In 1960, wow. hosted by the Lions Club on Deal Island.
Get that title back.
and actually, the boat's won a number of times since. Rosie Parks historically and still has been, is a really nice Skipjack and sails very well and has been successful in these races. So that's pretty cool. And Deal Island is certainly, I mean, the other two races are Annapolis on the 14th and Cambridge on the 27th, but Deal Island is such a unique location. And I know that there are a lot of Marylanders that have never been to Deal Island. They don't know where it is. But it's in Southern Maryland on the Eastern Shore.
There's some fabulous dock bars around there. Let me highly recommend you go check out Deal. It's fantastic. Plug. Get me some tickets to, you know, get me some drink tickets, people.
It's a cool place. And it really is still a little working town. The watermen, the commercial fishermen, are, you know, there's, I don't want to say vitality, but there's a lot of activity on Deal Island. It is still a very, very active fishing community, oystering, crabbing.
Okay. So are you nervous at all about defending a title?
Well, some people might not like to hear this. I will most likely be skippering the boat, and I am not a racer at all.
No.
I have a strong competitive streak,
okay.
competitive tendency, mm-hmm. but I love sailing for the leisurely and sort of, I don't know, I like the serenity of sailing. I like just the experience of a little bit of a more of a meander when I'm sailing, a little bit of an aimless adventure.
Okay.
And I will be trying to do well.
Okay.
But my goal is really just to attend, be supportive, and to have a good time.
See, I don't believe him. He's got these like piercing no. blue eyes yeah. here
you,
that are just
you don't
aggressive.
You need a racer to you know, steer the boat. But what yeah. you do need is a tactician to tell you, you know, where to go and what
yeah.
the fleet is doing and how to trim the sails and all that stuff. Sorry.
Yeah.
So do you have that aboard? Do you have a tactician?
Yeah, we will. Okay. We will. Yeah, there's actually a young man that used to work here who was an apprentice, and he's an unbelievably phenomenal sailor. Yeah. He is such a natural racer. And I hope that he'll be joining us. Mm-hmm. We actually have some like really, really cool people who are helping to support this. And they'll make it fun. So,
well, okay. So you're bringing in people because clearly you need quite a few bodies to sail these boats.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at that rig, I can already tell you don't have any electric winches. You don't have any.
No, we don't.
Wow.
You're going to have to raise these sails by hand. How many folks is it going to take to run one?
We would probably be fine even with just 4 or 5, actually.
Whoa. Wow.
But part of this, and something that I believe in very strongly, is we will be offering a sail training experience through our shipyard programming. So another thing that I'm responsible for in my job here is our managing our educational programs through the shipyard. And a lot of those things are what you might imagine, boat building related, but some of them are on the water related. So we do a spring seamanship class that's on the water, you know, going on and off the dock with a boat a bunch of times, learning some rules of the road. And now we'll have this, which is an experience to learn sail handling, sail theory, also rules of the road. Mm-hmm. And we'll be taking out 6 students. And when Ooh. I say student, I mean, these are mostly adult students. So anyone who's listening that's interested, they can come on board, but they're not just passengers. So they're expected to be engaged, yeah. to want to learn.
They're going
to
be crew.
Help, they will be crew.
They're going to need gloves, is what he's saying.
But they can be inexperienced. And I will say the hardest part of the whole thing is, I should have mentioned this earlier, Skipjacks do not have an engine. Instead, they have a push boat that has an engine in it. And it is sometimes called a yawl boat. Once you are sailing or sail dredging for oysters or racing, you have to have the push boat hauled up into the davits out of the water. And then that way, natural resource police officer could look with their binoculars and make sure that a dredge boat is actually sailing, mm-hmm. dredging on a sail day, or in the case of a race,
committee
referee will make sure that, you know, you're not actually powering along motor sailing. So, but to haul this yawl boat,
I think it'd be pretty obvious. Those are not like quiet engines.
No, they're not. They're huge engines. It's really the yawl boat is unlike a lot of, if you might be familiar with some of the New England boats that use yawl boats, you can get in the yawl boat and you can drive it around. Mm-hmm. These yawl boats don't have rudders. They don't have steering mechanisms. They're a box with an engine in it.
Wow.
And they are pretty much permanently secured to the stern of the vessel. And you use guy lines that are attached to the quarters of the skipjack of the mothership, and then mm-hmm. go back to the quarters of the push boat. And
he's
you
saying
haul
quarters,
them.
But what he means is the back corners.
Yep.
I'm helping you out here, people.
Well,
I know.
This, so what's cool for powerboat people, what this is, it's a giant outboard. And it's actually really handy to think of it that way, because if you've ever driven a vessel with a long keel with a little inboard engine, it takes a lot of experience. It's not like driving a boat with an outboard where you can kick the stern around real quick,
yeah.
steer in reverse, stuff like that. With an inboard engine, usually you have to goose ahead to find your direction and then reverse. With this thing, though, it's going to be a little bit more like that Carolina skiff with an outboard, with a Honda outboard,
mm-hmm.
except everything is very slow. Everything happens really, really slowly. But you can move this boat around. You can really haul it far, far over, and you can kick the stern over in reverse really easily. So there's some there. It takes a lot of practice, but once you get used to it, it really is like driving a boat with an outboard engine.
Okay, let's say that I'm too lazy to be crew on board, or I'm not lucky enough to be one of your 6 students, and I want to cheer on Team races. Chesapeake Bay,
yeah.
Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum, CBMM.
Yep. There you go.
Chibamama. Yep. I don't like this. What Do you have flags or colors or anything that we're supposed to wave around if we're in a spectator boat cheering you on?
Sure. Yeah, we will. I mean, I don't know if we'll have flags
team
that we'll
hand
out to people, but the boat will be recognizable. Rosie Parks will have a CBMM blue banner with the lighthouse, our logo, and probably a flag as well. And for those of you who are interested in watching from your own vessel, if you want to, you can launch a power vessel in Chance, if for Deal Island or in Annapolis or Cambridge. Definitely, it's a fun thing for spectators. It's a great event. The boats are somewhat slow, and there should be a pretty good number. I know that for the Annapolis race, there's 15 that have confirmed,
Whoa.
Which is a pretty big number. I bet there will be maybe, I would expect one or two that don't make it, but right. That's a pretty nice number of skipjacks. That would be the
amount.
Most that I've seen at one of these races, and I've been going for 7 years, at least 20 a year.
Are you going to know all the other crews or?
No, definitely not. I mean, there's going to be the kind of usual suspects, and then there will be a few where it's like, whoa, you know, that's cool that, you know, that boat showed up or made it, you know, or there's also boats. If, you know, it's really neat. If anyone winds up at Deal Island, there's a boatyard chance, across the way from Deal Island. And if you go in, you'll see, I mean, five or six skipjacks on the hard, some of them being restored, some of them hoping to be restored. you know, these boats come back. It's really amazing. I mean, I've seen skipjacks where I moved out here and I thought, oh my God, that thing's trashed. Ooh. Never coming back.
Never coming
and
back.
And then a couple years later, you see it somewhere, you know, hauled out somewhere else or sailing. And it's amazing. The people who work on these things are very, very resourceful. And they're very committed, and they can be, you know, another way of saying resourceful, scrappy, you know.
This is a terrifying race to commit to then, because if they know they can fix it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is horrifying.
But,
I am afraid for you
now.
You'll
have race committee boats.
Yeah.
You'll have, does it have a handicap system or it's one class?
It's just one class.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure from what I remember, there's no handicap system. So it's the first to cross the line at the finish.
Who's that?
One.
Oh my God, is that the Patriot getting underway?
That's Patriot.
I love that. That is fantastic. Yep. God, this museum is fantastic. Okay, well, you did tease the fact that folks could potentially be crew. How do they find out more about you, the museum, the skipjacks, all that good stuff?
Yeah. To find out more about us, cbmm.org, you can go to programs. Tab, public programs, and then shipyard programs from there. And you'll see all of our programs in the shipyard, anywhere from half hull modeling, seamanship, decoy carving to sail training on Rosie Parks. And I will also mention, it's not just the races. We're also selling the sail training package for the transits to and from these locations,
Ooh.
Which for some folks that might be more interesting because there's a little bit less at stake. If racing makes you a little nervous, a trip down to Deal Island from St. Michael's, that's a long, leisurely trip. It's probably about an 11 to 12 hour trip for us. And if you would like that kind of experience, there's a lot that you'd see along the way, depending on what the wind's doing. It could be, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that trip can go. It could be very, very lovely with a downwind run. Could be choppy and sloppy. We have no idea. For each leg of the trip, if people are interested, we have a date and then there's a rain date. So if you commit, you have to commit to the rain date. And then if we end up going outside of that, obviously there's a refund. But as you might know, anyone who is into sailing and has done a little bit of some longer, I mean, relatively longer passages, meaning they're not just going out in their harbor and popping back in, you don't just commit to a date and go, you know, if it's a nice day tomorrow and it's crappy today, we're going to go tomorrow. That's the way it works.
That's the reason Ed's not with us today. He had to go and beat some tropical storms coming our way. So he's off doing a delivery.
And I'll mention, you know, if that long trip doesn't sound appealing to you. There's an Annapolis race, there's a Cambridge race, there's shorter trips. So you're looking at maybe 5 hours, depending on how much sailing we end up doing. All these trips, no matter what the wind's doing, we will be setting sail at least for some time. But we can't sail all the way to Deal Island if there's no wind or if we're beating the whole way.
That makes sense. What's going on behind me that's making this lovely little thud noise? Yeah.
So behind you is the 1920 biboat Winnie Estelle being restored. We're actually kind of nearing the end of the project.
I can see right up her transom there.
You can. Yeah. So this has been a really, really massive project.
He doesn't think I'm funny.
We've replaced the keel, all of the longitudinal timbers, the backbone timbers, keel, stem post, stern post, horn timber. We've also replaced the chine logs. And now we have Jack Angier putting some bungs in the bottom boards, and we're wrapping up the bottom. We've got new power plant, new tier 3 John Deere diesel going in. It's suspended. It's not mounted. We've got a pilot house totally getting reworked, new head and sinks and plumbing and electrical and new, really everything.
Does it ever feel like you're just ship of Theseus-ing this
whole thing? Like, yeah, it does.
All new parts, and is it the same boat when you're done?
I can answer that question, actually. I spent a lot of time thinking about that question.
Okay.
So I would say there's a pulse, there's a memory that moves through this, and there's this continuous engagement. There's a thread, and it is an unbroken thread of engagement, of interaction and commitment to this vessel. Because of that, there might be still some abstract query regarding the authentic identity of the vessel, but there's an intuition that it is the same vessel. As it's engaged with continuously. So I think that for people who are close to something, if you're close to a vessel, say it's your boat and you've been working on it your whole life, mm-hmm. it's never going to dawn on you, is this the same boat as it was when I first, it's like, well, no, this is the boat I love. I've been working on her.
Yeah.
If a vessel is sort of dropped, meaning it's walked away from, it's forgotten about, no one remembers its story, no one remembers how it's built, and then picked back up and ripped to shreds and put back together, then yeah, sure, there's maybe some interesting question to be had about its identity. But in this case, and the case with some of our other vessels that have been almost completely rebuilt, mm-hmm. That question hasn't been, I would say, an enigmatic one more than maybe an abstract one.
That was entirely too beautifully said, and I'm grossed out because this is the Funny Boat Podcast, and we usually talk about Blackwater and boat shows.
I have some funny comments.
I'm so glad to hear it.
First comment is, and I've heard this somewhere, that wood boats require miles of caulking.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Miles?
Yeah, miles of it.
A lot.
It's a lot.
A lot of caulking.
Someone told me it's in miles.
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely a larger vessel, you'd be talking about miles. When we built the Dove here, which was launched in 2022.
She is the most perfect looking pirate monster ship you've ever seen.
There may have been a mile or... Because the seams, it's not just one layer of caulk. It could be up to four.
Okay.
Usually two.
Up to four, though.
It can be. Yeah, there could be cotton and oakum. There could be two layers of each. And then there's also vessels like behind us here, cross plank bottom, where there's a good chance that the very first fit of the bottom boards, they would not caulk the bottom. And it would swell perfectly, have a tight seam bottom. Mm-hmm. And then after maybe 10 years, during its first refit, you would add a caulking seam and caulk the bottom. But okay. A lot of these cross plank bottom boats, they actually didn't caulk the bottoms.
Okay.
Just let the swelling do the job.
So, are you ever, I don't think you are, because they're all purists when they're working on these boats, but I would be very tempted to just use epoxy on these things instead of...
That's a good question.
Yeah.
There are times where we will make some concessions for longevity's sake, but... So there's a, this actually goes back, I think, to the authenticity question. When we're thinking about authenticity, there's a few different components. One is the workmanship, which is how it's built. Mm-hmm. It's a plank on frame, solid, you know, Carvel, lab stray, cross plank bottom, herringbone, whatever, you know. The other is the actual materiality. Oh, this bow is built longleaf yellow pine on white oak. And then another might be place. Place is one. So for each vessel, there are all these different properties of the historical integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And they're prioritized differently. So for some boats, we have a boat, it's a very unique construction. It's a 9-log construction vessel. It means it's actually carved out of 9 logs pinned together.
Okay.
The identity of that vessel, so much of it depends on that log construction.
Right.
So when restoring it, you wouldn't really think to, you wouldn't want to compromise that component of the vessel because it's so integral to it.
You got to go get another log.
But there's other, but there's other vessels where, oh, something, some aspect of its materiality might be a little bit more accidental and a little less compelling or interesting to its identity. And then you might ask yourself that question, like, would in this case it be appropriate? So like one of the things we've just done is the tops on Winnie. They used to be canvased. They stretch canvas over tongue and groove decking, and then you put trim pieces around to cover up the staples or tacks. But
don't,
it's much
don't
better.
Don't tell me you're going to use Kevlar.
No, we use Dynel, which is a woven synthetic cloth, and it looks like canvas.
Yeah,
it actually stretches over the top, and it takes a ton of epoxy to set it. It doesn't end up looking like fiberglass. It has a kind of the warp and weft like canvas. So that's an example of where we would go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we would never here, it's a museum, we would never like glass over a bottom that's wooden.
Right.
That might be done in on Deal Island to get an extra 10 years out of a boat.
Okay.
But it's not going to be done here where we really do put historical
preservation.
But how about
gel coat or some kind of epoxy paint on the bottom? Do you do
probably
that?
Not the bottom again, just because part of the
you need that swelling.
Well, there's that, but also you could think of this system. There's a logic to it, and a part of its evolution is in the maintenance. So these bottom boards, they're very easy to replace.
Mm.
If you have a rotten bottom board, you pop one off. They're flat. They're straight. They're not carved.
Right.
There's not hollow cut into them. You pop it off, you put on a new one. You don't even have to be that skilled. I mean, these bottom boards are flat.
Are you are you talking trash about this guy over here? Like, calling him not skilled. My God.
No, I could see that. We gotta get the camera over there at some point.
So that's just to say that, you know, sometimes it's more than, you know, sometimes you've got to think about who's coming along after me to work on this thing, to fix this thing. And you want to make sure that no one likes tearing apart glass and cutting through epoxy with a skill saw. And you got to wear
it's
a respirator
if
you don't want to get cancer. So
Be nice to the next guy who owns your boat. Stop using 5200.
Yeah, that's a big one.
But
that's
you also paint the top sides, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you're painting the top sides, you know, old paint was lead-based.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure you don't want to use
tasted delicious.
We do. If you look out there, there's, we'll maybe get, for those of you who might see some images of this somehow, you'll see there's this kind of orange paint, which is a lead primer. It's a real red lead primer.
Okay.
You know, with the two-part epoxy stuff, we have some things like cabin trunks and stuff that are marine ply.
Okay.
And we would do two-part, potentially use a two-part paint on like marine ply. Yeah. Those paints are better on like homogeneous materials.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is the part where I'm going to tell you that if you want to nerd out massively some more, you need to get to the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum. You need to talk to the crews that are here. They love, love, love to slack off and tell you all about what they're doing and break their phones while they're at it. This has been the Funny Boat Podcast. Thank you so much for letting us do this. I really am just tickled to be in here.